At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Brewski, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
A missing teenager, body in the front trunk of a Tesla, the frunk, if you will. It's a new term I learned this week as well. A rising music star at the center, David, or D4VD, that you're seeing. And over a year of red flags, but somehow it all went unchecked. But beyond the outrage, beyond the speculation, there are real questions. What should have been done? And what still can be done? And what makes sense in this case? They found her body in the frunk of the Tesla. Did the whole body fit in there? Was she dismembered? Why was she dismembered? What does all of that say about the crime that took place? We're going to get into all of that today. We're joined by retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, someone who's worked these cases in the real world. When the leads are cold, Jennifer, the timeline is broken and the public wants justice before the evidence is even in. What does a case like this look like through federal eyes? And what's the risk when the clock keeps ticking and still no one's been charged yet?
Well, the clock's ticking, Tony, because they don't have the answers. I think that possibly that Tesla information, the Sentry mode that you can put a Tesla in, maybe was disabled. It seems to me if they had absolute evidence of who put her in that trunk, that that would be at least one charge that could be charged. But they haven't charged anything. So were the cameras disabled, or were the people who did that or person who did that covered in black like a Brian Koberger, and they can't make him out and they don't have big eyebrows? Yeah.
Educate us a little bit. You have a Tesla, and you even did an experiment. We'll talk about that in a few minutes here, but for those of us who don't, which is a good chunk of the population, Sentry mode on the car, and what does that mean, and what sort of features are on this vehicle that as we're looking at it, and we know it's the car of the future and it has a gazillion safety features beyond most vehicles. What other pieces can this car give us, and what might it not give us if the user itself decided, I don't want to be caught?
Well, what's interesting with the Tesla is it's really a computer on wheels, and I mean that very seriously, not figuratively. There's a large computer screen, and in fact, that is where your owner's manual even is, and you're able to engage certain items that you want or don't want. Everything is controlled by your phone. Mm-hmm. So if you want to open the door, if you want to open the trunk, if you want to do anything with the vehicle, you do it by your phone, and it alerts you if you have it set to that. Now, there's up to 9 cameras on this car, and if you have it set to Sentry mode, meaning the mode that keeps that car safe, people who touch it, go around it, you're going to get photos of all mm-hmm. of that. But it takes literally your fingertip to disable that. And if that was disabled on this car, nobody's going to see anything because there's not going to be any cameras in there.
And I guess one of the questions I would have right now would be, okay, it's not necessarily sending notification. We don't know the answer to this question, but if they disabled it, is that, and I don't know if you know the answers or not, is that disabling just the notifications to a phone, or is that disabling the infrastructure of the vehicle to actually collect that data? Because I'm wondering if, you know, deep within the confines of the car, within its computer systems, if some of that data exists, but is just not out there as it would be if you had selected, yes, please send me those notifications.
So there's actually 2 parts to that. So there's a notification that you can enable or disable. As an example, I have mine disabled. Mm-hmm. but you can enable the Sentry remote, which I have mine enabled, so that the camera is working, everything is monitored in terms of anybody touching that vehicle or being around that vehicle. So they're actually two separate commands. But to your question of if you have your cameras enabled and the Sentry mode turned off, is any of that, you know, taken? I don't think so. It wouldn't make sense to me that if you enable it, it's still working.
What I wonder about is maybe the cameras are off, but I do wonder about just basic function of the car. When they get into the vehicle log data, like we've seen in so many cases where, okay, well, it accelerated this way. I mean, look at the Karen Reed case where it took two trials to discover, oh, there's this whole other set of data over here we didn't know existed. Something like this, I would think there might be records of, okay, the trunk or the frunk was opened. Things like that. Maybe not as advanced as we'd like it to be, but enough where it's going to tell us the last time that trunk was originally opened, which would tell us when a body was put in the trunk, you know, maybe. And just other little things here, doors opening, the GPS of the vehicle, things like that, that you typically can't completely disable unless you, I guess, really, really know what you're doing, or maybe just you can't do, period.
No, I agree with you. I think that the GPS system, I think whether the doors are opened or closed, whether the trunk is open or closed, the speed at which the vehicle goes, when it stops, I think they're going to be able to track all of that. I don't know that you can disable that. At least I've never tried to disable it. I don't know that you can. I'll look into that, Tony, later, but I don't think so. I think it's going to record that.
So we have the body that is found in the trunk, and it's been reported that the body was dismembered. And I'm not trying to be gruesome here. I've heard various reports on this. I know you have too. What do we know factually at this moment about the state of Celeste's body as found in that vehicle?
So I'm going to go back to the genesis, right? The very genesis of the reporting. And that was from the local Los Angeles station. And in that, it's specific. It's very specific. It says the torso and the head. And then there's also a photograph of the bag where the body, the remaining 71 pounds, was. And you can see from that bag, it's not completely full. You can tell there is not a full body in there. That's my interpretation of the photo. Secondarily from that, though, we know that the shush, right, S-H-H, and then there's three dots afterwards on the index finger, we know that that is how she was identified. So for me, there's a lot of questions in terms of was that also in the bag but not discussed? Was that in another part of the vehicle? That seems confusing. But that was our first reporting on it, the body being dismembered.
So I guess we can say unconfirmed, kind of speculation at this moment in time, but her whole body is likely not intact. Like there may be another piece of her body elsewhere.
I don't know about elsewhere. I think it's possible from the photograph that we can all see of this bag, you could dismember the body as was reported and fit it all in that bag nicely compared to an elongated 5 foot, 1 inch body that would, of course, also likely been in rigor, some stage of rigor.
So, I mean, what does that tell us about this case if the body is cut up? When you think of that, we often think, oh, this is, you know, this is rageful, this is horrible. Or is it more of a crime of convenience of let's try to fit this thing into this trunk because by itself, might it not fit?
That's my belief, Tony, the latter. In other words, this was a situation like most situations of dismemberment where it's done, and it sounds terrible, but it's for practicality.
Yeah.
Either you slice up different body parts and you can strewn them all over, try to, you know, it takes longer to identify. Of course, in this day in DNA, it wouldn't matter as much, but back in the day, and then also for people fitting a body into particular containers, that is often the reason for dismemberment.
So is that typically, I mean, is that, I guess I, Honestly, I've never really thought that much about dismemberment, like why you would do that.
Lies. She thinks about it all the time.
No, I don't. Honest. I think of other things. But now I lost my train of thought, Tony.
You're talking about dismemberment.
Yes, thank you. But I mean, is that typically why somebody would dismember a body is for convenience, or like Tony referenced, is it rage that I'm going to cut you up? I mean, I don't want to be completely gruesome here, but
it's a lot of rage though to like, it's rage.
I would think so.
I think when I think rage, I think, you know, stabbing, I think, I don't know, maybe shooting more than you need to chop. Like that's like, you get into butchery at that
point. That's methodical.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is. In most cases, it's a huge percentage that it's for a practical reason.
Wow. Mm.
Not out of rage or anger. People sort of think that for some reason because it is so gruesome and terrible. And you think, how could you do that to somebody you loved or somebody you knew? How could you do that? But it becomes a matter of how am I going to get them in this frunk if I don't do this?
What do you, what's your thoughts on, and maybe, I don't know, we've you know, stats, but just, you know, from experience here, when you run into a case like this where the body is dismembered, does that tend to increase or decrease the odds of whoever did the dismembering of getting caught? I'm just wondering that because you do kind of, you create more of a mess, for lack of a better term.
It absolutely is detrimental, actually, because now you have tool marks you can work with that you can go back to what actually caused that and then work on making that tool, not making it, but working on seeing if that person purchased that tool or had that tool. So now they've got to hide all the tools. Now they've made a huge bloody mess. So now all their garments, wherever this was done, all of that crime scene is going to be just riddled with blood and DNA. So quite frankly, they should find a place to hide the body that would comport to the configuration of the body.
I mean, they were checking the drains of the house that he was renting for $20,000 a month. And I mean, at least that's what some of the reporting was earlier on of, you know, getting into that system and seeing, you know, what you never know what you're going to find in the drain. As anyone who's ever gone and gotten a drain snake and stuck it down, you're like, oh, I had no idea all this was living in my drain. And then you throw up into a garbage can and then throw the drain snake away. At least that's been my experience. It's such a gross. I hate having to do that. Like they need stronger Drano because that stuff is gross. They got in there. I mean, they're looking, so they would have. And I'm wondering about that too. People when they're trying to clean up the crime scene, trying to wash things away, they're going to go to a drain, they're going to go to a shower, they're going to go to a sink, wherever they can find a drain that makes sense. I'm sorry this is getting so gross today, but yeah. It's just kind of the nature of what we're talking about. Does bodily remains, fluids, things like that, do they tend to stick around in drains after someone does this? Or did the trace materials stand no matter how much you try to flush that drain clean with chemicals or whatnot?
Absolutely, because of the configuration of that drain that goes down and loops up often. And that's why things get trapped in there, as you so well put. I would love to do a drain experiment, right? We could take any drain apart and we're going to find hair. We're going to find all sorts of gunk and junk there. And you know, Celeste had a huge head of hair.
Yeah.
And that hair may become very important in terms of if that was trapped, if anything else was trapped on it. In other words, blood on the hair that would have been trapped in the drain.
And we'll talk more about the investigation in just a little bit, but I want to keep talking about logistics here for a little bit. You decided to do an experiment of your own and try to see, you know, could you fit this body as a whole into the trunk? I saw your tweet about it the other day. I kind of chuckled a little bit, but it's a good idea. And I know you said, you know, sometimes just going back to reality and seeing things in real time, in real space, really opens up your mind. It makes you see things off of paper in ways that you otherwise may not. Tell me about the experiment. What came to your mind? How did you think about doing this?
Well, there was this whole, you know, argument going on sort of online whether she was dismembered or not. And kind of everybody, I think, forgetting about the original reporting that was at least referenced that it was from law enforcement sources, right? Mm-hmm. So, and when you go back and look at that, people were just sort of disregarding that. And then they were making all these leaps and saying, oh, well, she might have been dismembered, but it probably happened naturally through the process of her degrading, her body degrading. But then having a Tesla and knowing the size of these frunks, they are nothing like a trunk. They're small. They have a plastic or a polymer, so they're very hard. They don't give, and they're not deep at all.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm 5'1", 5'1 and a half maybe, almost the exact dimensions of her. Mm-hmm. Could I fit in a frunk? And this is something that I've done throughout my career. As an example, there was a little six-year-old missing. Mm-hmm. And the hypothesis that a lot of people in law enforcement were going with was that he crawled out of the window. Well, the window was raised so high, and of course, there was no stool. This was a horrible situation.
Yeah.
But there was no way I could even hoist myself and crawl through this particular window. It was also sort of boarded. Mm-hmm. There was no way to fit through there. And then on the other side of it was a fire ant pile, which was undisturbed. So sometimes you just have to go to the crime scene and you have to look at the particular circumstances and see if it's even plausible. And that's what I wanted to do here. I wanted to see if I could even fit in an oversized, gigantic leaf lawn bag.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got one.
Yeah.
And tried to, you know, ask my husband. And again, I'm fully pliable as a live human. A dead human would be in a state of rigor mortis, or at least some stage. At about 2 hours, it sets in where you're stiff. You start stiffening. But nevertheless, he tried to compact me in there. Again, I'm only 5'1", 110-ish, maybe. Yeah. There was no way. He kind of finally, you know, we got my head compacted.
Yeah.
And then he's 5'10" or so, works out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And David is only 5'3", 5'4", maybe on the roster. And
sure.
He's a big guy. And even with trying to lift, the slipperiness of that bag makes it so difficult to manipulate and put somebody dead weight, if you will, in a trunk. So I thought that lended itself to believe that, sure enough, she was likely dismembered.
Yeah, we got the video of you doing this. This is on Jennifer's Twitter, if you want to check it out as well. But this is... this is you on the ground. There he is, wrapping, getting your legs into the bag. Do you sign a waiver or anything before this with your husband, just to be sure? Like, you know, there's a record of this.
Well, it's kind of funny because, of course, neighbors,
right? But are they surprised by any of this?
Of
at
course,
this point?
Neighbors.
No, they're not. I mean, but I was looking around.
Yeah.
I was waiting for, you know, the call. I didn't get the call.
Well, that's good.
No, that's disturbing. Actually, they should have called.
So it looks like he's trying to lift the bag. It's very difficult with you as a whole in it to try and get this thing lifted up. And, you know, he struggles and then...
It's dead weight.
Yep. And then you... Yep. Okay.
You can stop now because I can tell there was no way he was going to get me up.
Sure.
Moving and, you know, it was so slippery. I was falling out falling forward.
Yeah.
It was just going to drop me.
Yeah. I mean, if, again, not trying to be morbid here, but it is what it is. If you were in pieces, if there was like, you know, if you were in thirds or whatever, you could kind of hoist that bag up, you know, a little, maybe heavy, but it'd be a different way of lifting than this. Let's look at the other one where you do get into the trunk. Let's see how that. So Is there, I mean, so you're kind of up there, but again, you're in a hole. It's not like you're just in pieces where you could kind of be pushed down and jammed into that trunk. Obviously the body was jammed into the trunk, so it was shut, but this really does kind of show if it was a body as a whole, it really wouldn't have likely fit.
It is really small.
It's really small, and no matter how I did it, whether I went in the fetal position, yeah, or left to right was the best. And there was more footage of this. I only did this one, but he tried really hard to get me down into there. And I was like, okay, uncle, can you hear me?
Tap out. Yep.
Did he hear the uncle, or did the frunk ever close on you?
No, he could never get it closed, but I'm telling you, he tried hard and I was pretty squashed in there. No matter what, with the rigor,
yeah,
and everything, I think it's just pretty impossible.
Is there a release on the inside of the frunks? If someone were to put you in there alive, could someone release it from the inside?
You know, that's interesting. I did not see one. And in fact, I told them have their phones on the ready, because their phones is how it's disabled.
Okay.
So if they would get me in there, I said, make sure, you know, you've got it pulled up on your phone, so I'm not in here too long.
And there's not a nationwide Tesla outage at that moment in time, and all of a sudden the phones don't connect to the car.
Yeah. Or you have to go in and get on the computer and,
yeah,
and go through a few steps to get it open. But yeah, it's very small. There is an X model that he actually had. This is the Y. Mm-hmm. So the X model is slightly larger. You can fit golf clubs in there. But believe me, golf clubs, it was a little under, I believe, 2 more cubic feet.
Mm-hmm.
Still very, very small.
Let's talk about the method here of the dismemberment. How often do we see cases where dismemberment is playing a role where it is an intentional murder, like this is, you know, she was murdered for a reason, or there's an accident and, oh my God, we got to cover up this body? Considering dismembering typically is more of a crime of convenience than it is a rage, I'm wondering if, you know, I don't want to get caught for this. This was a horrible, horrible accident of some sort. I'm going to dismember the body. Do we see that typically more in murders, or in homicides, or do we see that more in someone trying to cover up something that went horribly wrong?
Well, I can think of 2 examples right off the bat. There was a situation in Oklahoma where an individual, these guys came in to rob them. And the guy ended up killing the individuals that were going to do the robbery and cut them all up into pieces and threw them in the river. Mm-hmm. So you might say there, well, that was a situation of convenience, as
sure,
you think about. And then another case that's hugely in the news right now is Brian Walsh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brian Walsh did something very similar, I believe. I believe because they have the indicia of this, is cut Anna up so that he could put her in a bag, so that he could incinerate her. I believe she's incinerated and gone.
Yeah.
Again, that's both a situation that I think was more planned as opposed to one that was not as planned.
Let's talk about just the mindset that one would have to be in to do this. I don't know. I think it takes a special individual to be able to butcher a body, basically, another human being. I don't know that this is an ability that everyone necessarily has that they could follow through on this, even if they wanted to. That says something interesting about the character that could do this. You know, we're talking about David's never been charged with anything. He's maintaining his innocence, all pure speculation. You know, a 20-year-old music artist, you know, and everything I've researched on David, and I've watched several of his interviews, and yeah, he's a fairly macabre artist, but he seems like a fairly sensitive kind of dude. Kind of, you know, very
on the surface.
Yeah. On the surface. Yeah. But you know, there does seem to be a lot of emotion there that he's somewhat in touch with. I mean, look at his writings, look at his music. It's dark, it's macabre, but it's very emotional. I don't know. David doesn't strike me that he'd be there chopping up a body, but it doesn't mean that there couldn't be somebody else trying to help this situation along. What are your thoughts on that? Just the nature of what this portion of the crime is.
Well, first of all, talking about David again, he hasn't been charged with anything. But, you know, I go back to the scene where he's got blood handprints all over his white shirt and he's dragging a body and putting it in the trunk. So let's just say that not a lot of artists and maybe not a lot of people even really imagine doing something like that.
Sure.
I don't ever want to put Lady Gaga in this situation.
But you're going to.
But I'm going to. The woman wore a meat dress at an award ceremony. So, I mean, artists will go to extreme lengths to get attention. So I'm wondering, is this life imitating art or is this his expression? I don't know. I know a lot of artistic people and they will take it to extremes. So I guess I leave that a little bit, you know, I leave a little space for that maybe this is his art form. We may not agree with it, but that's just what he does. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you bring up a great point. If Celeste wouldn't have been found dead in his trunk.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. There's that.
There's that. So for me, that's where we sort of step over the line, I guess, where it's just sort of coincidental. But again, he hasn't been charged with anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When a body is found in a car like this, I want to talk about the investigative end of this. And we're talking about David D4VD, in case you're like, who's David? I've been reading this and I just see D4VD. That's him. That's the guy we're talking about. Jennifer Coffendaff, a retired FBI special agent with us discussing all of this. From an investigative angle here, when you got a body found in a car that's been sitting for days, maybe weeks in the hot California sun, I mean, it becomes an oven as well. So let's add that aspect to it. I think a lot of people are thinking about that part. It's cooking. You're literally, you can cook things probably in there if you really tried. What sort of evidence is going to be most time sensitive here when they're looking at the body itself, the remains of the body? What sort of things, can be found, what sort of things might have been degraded or lost in the time, at least several days, that it was sitting in that vehicle?
Well, the number one thing I would do as an investigator in this case is get a forensic anthropologist on this case, as well as a forensic bug expert. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that immediately upon death, or close to immediately, when you're talking about the space of time being, you know, weeks, bugs begin to form in the body and they start eating the body. That's why a body decomposes. And so that information is going to be critical for a timeline. It's going to be critical for trying to understand the cause of death, I believe, as well. In other words, how long was she in that trunk? Mm-hmm. They can start to narrow this down. And then what was the causation? And oftentimes a forensic anthropologist can make headway with a body that's dismembered and severely decomposed like she was.
What do you make of the fact that whoever did this put a body in a trunk on a busy road that this car is going to get attention at some point in time, obviously, and it did. Just the line of thinking of putting this body in this trunk to conceal it. Was this midway through a plan of somebody who didn't have a very good plan of, well, I'm going to park the car here until I figure out the next thing to do, and are too inexperienced in life to realize that cars get towed eventually if they aren't moved? That part also kind of gets me of like, this is very poor planning, whoever did this, unless it was intentional. And I'm not figuring that part out quite yet.
No, I think these are absolute rookie mistakes. This isn't somebody that's a career, you know, mass murderer or anything like that. This, I believe this is somebody who it's a crime of passion or it's a cover up, mm-hmm, for something less sinister, like a drug overdose. And it's absolute panic that set in. What are we going to do with the body? Mm-hmm. And this was a situation of convenience. And they thought, we'll just put this right over here. No one will notice for a while. I also believe they probably planned to move that body, move mm-hmm. her, move Celeste, or move that vehicle. And for whatever reason, they never got to it before it was towed.
And that's another weird yeah. part. That's like, what are you waiting for, I guess? Like, you got the body in the trunk. You need to stop at the house for what? For how many days? Why? What? Yeah, again, rookie mistake. Ignorance, young, dumb. I don't know. It just seems stupid.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.